And welcome to the John, Paul, and Mike Show. My name is Paul Holmes.
My name is John Jurisic, and we are very lucky to be sitting in the dining room of Lisa Help, somebody that I've known for several years. Very proud to know, and I like to think that she's a friend. I guess we'll find out during this conversation whether that's true or not.
We'll know by the end, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
She makes a mean cup of coffee as well.
Strong cup of coffee.
So thanks very much for joining us
yeah,
today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks.
This is very exciting.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. I guess, wow, so the news is, the rumor is that you are running for mayor of the city of Victoria.
Absolutely. It's more than a rumor. It was on the front page of the Times call list on January the 2nd. I thought people...
Sorry, which publication was that?
You know, our daily newspaper. Yeah, I thought people need a year or as good a year as possible to see who I am and what I'm about. So
I was surprised by the reaction, especially from, I suppose... That you and I, Paul, are not running for mayor. We can name names. Maybe Lisa can't, but there were I guess Dean's camp or somebody else said, "Gee, you know, I shouldn't be declaring so early." I don't know why. I think it's inspiring, actually, and noble that you want to try to be a leader in this community. Why not tell people? I don't know why that has to be hidden.
Well, absolutely, and you know, in truth, part of what prompted my announcement is in his end of the year interview with the Times columnist, which was published December 30th, Dean said, "Yeah, I'm running again." So he announced, and no harm in me doing the same thing.
Absolutely. So the community is one hell of a lot luckier for it. So you want to get into this? We've got some questions for her, Paul.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you go first?
Well, I have the. So Lisa,
because all mine are really hard.
Excellent. I'm ready.
Lisa and I had the good luck of being on a radio show together on CFAX. And so I've had some experience and some understanding of where Lisa comes from on some of the key issues, but that's now been about a year ago or maybe even a year and a half ago. And so the 11 listeners of that show, we like to think that we're trying to get 12 for ours, heard our opinions around economic development and economic sustainability in our region. And I think sometimes that issue just doesn't get the kind of importance and discussion that it warrants. So,
and action. It might get lots of discussion. We need more action.
Well, I know you've been a counselor now for a term. I know that Dean has identified that economic development is an important issue for the city of Victoria. I happen to believe that there's more talk than action. And so why don't you give us some sort of foundational place of what you think the city should do? How should the city act? What is your economic development platform? Not for just building big industry and bringing in big jobs, but providing a sustainable sort of foundation for our region.
Great question.
In this city.
Great question. So I'm the guest, so I've got a bit of a time to give my answer. Yes. So I'm coming at this whole platform building, not with just a platform to get elected, because in some ways that's easy. You can make all sorts of promises and say, these are the things I'm going to do. But what me and my team have been systematically building for the last 2 or 3 months with hours and hours and hours using a very rigorous methodology, which I won't go into because it'll bore people to death, is what's my plan for my first 4 years in office. So we have a plan. We've got 150 actions that need to be taken to implement that plan. So it is very detailed. And so coming from that, then it's easy to flesh out what's my platform. And so in terms of economic development, there's a couple of approaches that need to be taken. And the first thing is clean things up at City Hall. City Hall, if the goal, and I think this is something that probably Dean and I would agree on. I don't think there's anyone in Victoria that would disagree. If the goal is that Victoria is a place where there's always enough for everyone to prosper, the city needs to do two fundamental things to get there. We need to manage our resources well, both financial and human. And this is the part that excites me the most. I'll talk about that management of resources and fiscal responsibility because that's the easy part. The second thing the city needs to do is actively and continuously create opportunities for its residents and businesses. Not just wait for things to happen, but the city needs to actively create these broad-based opportunities because that's how you get to sustainable prosperity. It doesn't just happen. You have to do stuff. So the first 6 months in office for me will be turning City Hall from a hierarchical silo-based place to a project-based, process-oriented organization. Sounds like a lot of lingo. What that means is...
I understand.
Well, yeah.
That's very exciting.
Exactly. Yes. It's really exciting. And the guy that I've been working with, Domenico Lepore, he's a professor of this. His website, his business is called Intelligent Management, and he's been the captain of this process. He's done this all over the world for the last 25 years, turned organizations from dysfunctional, silo-based, hierarchical organizations into organizations that identify projects, assign project team leaders, draw on the best resources from inside and outside the organization, and get things done. So that's what the first 6 months is going to look like. It starts by getting the city manager on board, and our city manager is already going in that direction, by building a strong commitment from the senior management and the directors and from council that this city hall, after our next term in office, is going to look very different. So that's the first 6 months. It means saying, if you come into the city hall to open a business, you can expect your answer in X number of days or less. Input, dot, 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 output, happy resident, happy business owner. And again, I'm not going to go into the action by action plan.
No, but this sense of being business friendly often is misinterpreted as it's business friendly favor. It's not. It's just business friendly.
But I think...
As it is friendly with anyone.
Well, but this is the problem. This is the fundamental problem at City Hall. And it's not one person's fault. It's not one politician's fault. It's just the culture of the last 150 years. It doesn't matter if you're a business who wants to open, if you're a neighborhood association who wants to plant an orchard, if you're a resident who wants to renovate their bathroom, or if you're a person who wants to have a block party. Everybody feels the frustration. So that's the first thing to fix. And then the second, 3.5 years will be spent creating opportunity. And I, again, ask me questions, I'll tell you more.
John and I are actually planning a block party, aren't we, John?
Excellent.
I don't know if Lisa's included.
Yeah.
Or
well, everyone's going to be
team helps.
To our block
yeah,
party.
Yeah, very good.
Team helps.
Yeah.
So, John, seriously, we got to stop having these interviews where we're, the least intelligent people in the room. Like, I'm not entirely sure I knew half of what Lisa was saying, but fundamentally, Lisa, when I think of economic development, what I think of is all of the people I went to high school with that felt the only way that they were going to get ahead in life was either go and get a government job, which many of them did, or get the hell out of Victoria. And to me, that doesn't seem like a really diverse economic opportunity for the kids that grow up here.
Absolutely. And it's fascinating. And I was talking about this on CFAX yesterday. There are two things that are going to drive this election. There's the things that motivate people who are 50 and older who regularly vote. And those are big infrastructure projects that are, arguably not going in the best way they could. Johnson Street Bridge and sewage. There's a whole bunch of yammering from that 50 and older crowd about this is, fiscal responsibility. What I'm hearing from people who are 40 and under on a daily basis, and you're the second person that's mentioned this today, is I don't want to have to leave the city in order to have an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the city has a huge role to play in creating opportunities. Everything from making it easy to open a business. Hell, what if the city, partners to open a business incubator? What if someone comes into the city
Holy
and
crap.
Says, I've got an idea. We say, awesome. How can we make that happen?
Thank you.
It's not just, and I get tired of hearing that City Hall should just get out of the way. It's not that City Hall should get out of the way. City Hall should actively say, how do we get to yes? How do we make sure, so that's, yeah, anyways.
Well, let's dig into that a little deeper.
Yeah.
Because
can I interject one
yes.
thing, though? So Sasha Angus, who you know as well, was Economic Development Officer of Victoria for the Greater Victoria Development Agency for a long time, came from Edmonton, where in Edmonton, he had a large staff that looked after economic development because it was a big deal. And in Victoria, he was, I think, a team of one, maybe two, and it was everybody's afterthought. And I kind of look at that and I go, wow, why can't we as a region, and I guess get into regional issues big time, but why can't we as a region prioritize creating economic opportunities so that kids have the opportunity to stay here. Because, you know, I want my son, when he grows up, to be able to stay in Greater Victoria. I'm not entirely sure that's going to happen. And I can tell you this much, John, and we've had this discussion before, and I think you actually feel the same way, even though you are over 40. So am I. But, you know.
By a day.
But the reality is, you know, it was a really bad personal economic decision of mine to not leave Victoria after high school. And so a lot of people that I know who have lots of wealth and lots of money and were very successful in their careers and live here, they did it somewhere else. And that's just wrong. That's just fundamentally wrong. So, you know.
Absolutely. And I mean, another piece of it, and this, again, it's fascinating. This is why I love my job and particularly love my job as the mayoral candidate, because people are happy to share their stories. So I met with a guy last Friday, 32 years old, runs the Freedom 55 office here in Victoria. Smart guy. He lives across the street at the Hudson Building. So he literally walks out of his house across the street and up to his office, you know, makes a good deal of money and cannot afford to buy himself a house in the city. So that's part of the, we need to create opportunity. Yeah. And we also need to create housing that people who are
affordable housing.
It's interesting. We need to reframe the whole conversation about affordable housing, because when we talk about affordable housing, most people think, you know, housing the homeless people who live on Pandora Street. And that is absolutely important for sure. Not that it's the city's role to do that. The city can be a good partner. But we need to have housing, workforce housing, housing that, you know, and that's a hard nut to crack.
Every politician I've ever advised, John, I say, what's number one region? What's number one issue in this region is affordability, period.
Cost of living, yep.
Right? It's outrageous. We're a working couple, my wife and I. We live in Souk, and we're, you know, scraping by okay, right? But, you know, like, that's it. Do we want to live? Souk's a beautiful place. I wouldn't bash Souk. But
well, then, if we would get John Horgan. If they were, I'm trying to get over a month.
But honestly, I would move to Victoria if there was a hope in hell that I could actually afford to live here.
Well, that's one we could go on for a while.
Yeah,
and I think the solution to that, to the workforce housing challenge, is likely more a regional one. As you're likely aware, I'm helping the manufacturers out Sydney North Sandwich Way with some key issues. That's a key issue.
Yeah.
And when one looks at a possible solution, with over 75% of those employees leaving that area to go live elsewhere in the region, one starts to think of actually solving that problem with key, centers of solutions. So we could actually have people leaving that area, driving into Victoria, living in Victoria. Half of those folks who drive from Sydney go to the West Shore. Mm-hmm. And so you think, actually, the way that our region works is almost like a V or an L.
So you're proposing a bridge?
so along the way, one could have... It doesn't mean affordable workforce housing has to be necessarily on the peninsula, but it could be... Along that route,
at the nodes, transit nodes, and then you have exactly. Then you have transit-based development, whether they're people driving cars or doing other modes of transportation, and then new villages and new hubs start to. I mean, there's just one of the fundamental challenges with this city, and I want to go back to your question of the region, is that there's this zero-sum mentality. There's a feeling, and it's palpable. I think it's part of the DNA of the city and of the region, and we can talk about Langford in a minute, is that if somebody else wins, then I therefore must lose, right? And I think that's really old school thinking.
Yeah.
There, you know, the kind of mayor that I will be is the kind of mayor that puts together situations where a number of people can win and be better than they were just if they were doing it by themselves. And so this goes to the question of the region and Sasha Angus and now Dallas Gislason. Yeah, they're one-man shows. And part of the problem is because just like economic development – or just like everything else, we do economic development in the same way, which is it's allegedly the Greater Victoria Development Agency, but only Saanich and Victoria actually put money into it. And I think we need to blow that up. We need to make it a standalone agency that's not some committee of the chamber. I mean, the governance of the GVDA, the Greater Victoria Development Agency, is part of what the problem is. And then we need to reframe the whole conversation about the region. We need to stop talking about Greater Victoria. We need to stop talking about the CRD, and we need to start thinking about Metro Victoria.
Yes.
Metropolitan Victoria. What does that look like? Who's a player? Who wants to play? How are we going to market that to the world, right? Metro Victoria is key, I think, to doing economic development and everything else in the region differently.
Lisa, you know, I've been a fan of yours, and I don't mind saying on the podcast, I've been a fan of yours for a long time. And it's the fresh ideas and, you know, like when
an outlook.
And when you got elected to council, I was, of course, I didn't vote for you because I didn't live here.
That's okay. You have friends who do.
I was very excited because you brought a different, fresh perspective. You didn't just say, hey, we've always done it this way, so let's just keep doing it that way. And that's so admirable. So I guess my question to you is then, are the people in the city of Victoria ready for not just one councillor with that kind of approach, but for the mayor to have that kind of approach? Because, you know, let's face it, and I can tell you, because I ran for council years ago, and when I went door to door when I was 23 years old, knocking on doors, asking people to vote for me, they said to me, well, don't you think you're just a little bit too young? And I said, you know what? If you had an entire council of 23-year-olds, that would be a problem. But if you have one, that's called diversity, right? And so it's fantastic we have diversity on council. Is Victoria ready for that in the mayor's chair?
Absolutely. I think Victoria is not only ready for it, Victoria is yearning for it. So there are a couple of things that are misunderstood about Victoria. One is that it's newlywed and nearly dead. That, you know, it's a whole bunch of young people and a whole bunch of old people. The largest demographic in Victoria, the largest single demographic, are 24 to 35 year olds. That is the biggest population block. So I'm a little bit outside of that at 38 years old. But if we had at least two or three people who actually represented the majority of the population, or the largest demographic of the population. Exactly. And I think what we would start to see, I mean, it's interesting being out listening to what folks have to say, and they're not talking about bridges and sewers. They're talking about job creation. They're talking about opportunities. They're talking about being entrepreneurs and wanting their ideas supported and nourished, right? So that, I think that the city needs a mayor who is coming with a fresh set of eyes, not an experienced politician. Somebody said, oh, Lisa, you've been on council only one term. Are you sure you're ready to run for mayor? And I said, that's the exact kind of person you want on as mayor, because I have the experience. I understand in depth, and I studied the city for a long time, kind of academically, before I got elected to council. I have a deep understanding of how the process works, but I haven't been assimilated.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk, get into some of the nuts and bolts of what a city can do to help create a sustainable community. And we're on the ed dev piece.
Yep.
Okay. I've worked with Stu Young, the mayor of Langford, literally for 20 years. I get how that's happened out there. A lot of people don't like what's happened out there. A lot of people would kill to have what's happened out there. So let's think about what that is. And could that happen? Could something like that happen elsewhere? And the answer is absolutely yes. Stu hasn't gone out and bought all these businesses and brought them in. He's made City Hall and the processes by which you do business in Langford easier and efficient.
Absolutely.
He hasn't broken rules.
Of course not.
He hasn't not allowed people to have input. All of those things exist, but it's easier to do business. And so I'm often perplexed when folks say, well, we don't want a Langford, which I guess in their worst thinking means
unbridled growth.
Unbridled growth.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what it is. It's that you can do things easier out there. And so I'm hearing that that's what could happen under your mayoralty.
Absolutely.
You could make things easier, but that doesn't mean that our neighborhood councils wouldn't still have an opportunity to voice their opinion, right?
Of course not. And this is the problem. It's not an either or. If we have community input, and we on another podcast I'm involved in, we just interviewed this morning Stacy Kuyak, who's been up building Ford McMurray.
Yeah.
And he said that the key mistake that they made there was not getting community input at the beginning, right? My firm belief, and not even just belief, my experience is if we have all the people, the community associations, the developers, the city, and whoever else wants to be involved at the outset of any process, it actually speeds the process. So it's not about rough riding over anybody at all.
No. And that's the misconception about the West Shore.
But I think I want to try and change the narrative, because it's not just businesses or developers that are frustrated with City Hall. It's neighborhood associations. It's individuals. So I think what we need to do is create a City Hall where for every input, there's a process that is recognizable, systematic, that can be statistically moderated so that we know how are we doing, that leads to a predictable output. It doesn't matter if the input is, I want to hold a neighborhood festival. Great. Do these five things and you get your permit. I want to rezone a large piece of land. Good. These are the things we're looking for. And there's your rezoning, right? So, or not if there's large public outcry, but we need to help people get to yes faster. And because that does a number of things. One, obviously it's more efficient. B, what it does is it frees up the time of the very well-paid, very talented staff at City Hall to innovate. You think they like the red tape? You think the union likes the red tape? No one does, right? And that's the first thing that we need to just, everybody loses if we don't have inputs and outputs with processes that lead us in the right direction.
Have you thought about doing like a review? I know years ago, I think it might have actually been Alan Lowe, did a review of all the bylaws and threw out a whole bunch of funny ones, right? I remember you had to have somebody run ahead of a horse and carriage if they had a motor car, something like that. Anyway, it was
absolutely
ridiculous. Yeah. But I'm not talking about legislation. I mean, in terms of processes, do like a comprehensive review of processes and ask for every process, is this the best way to do this?
Oh, that's the whole plan that we've developed. That's the first thing we're going to do. And, you know, awesome. if I win the election, this person that I'm working with, Domenico, and I are going to go in. I'll rest on Sunday, November the 16th, and on November the 17th, which is the first Monday after being elected, to December the 5th, when I'm sworn in, we're going to start that review of the city processes. And again, we've got one of the things that really does motivate me to be the mayor is our new city manager. He's already moving the city in this direction. And I think it's a review of processes, but then not just reviewing. We review, we study, and then nothing happens. It's a review,
right?
An implementation of project teams that are tasked with specific projects. And, you know, it's interesting, when we were putting together this plan, we were surprised by the bylaws, and we spent a whole evening, you know, in a very systematic way, making a plan to review the bylaws, because there are two types of bylaws: one that prohibit, and then there are actually bylaws that enable, that no one knows that they even exist. And we could actually be doing a lot more than we are.
So can I tell people about your podcast?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Lisa is involved with, is it monthly podcast?
Bi-weekly, every 2 weeks.
Bi-weekly podcast, Lisa, Jean, and Eric.
The Lisa, Jean, and Eric Show, 29erradio.com.
Yeah. And we'll put that in the program show notes as well.
Absolutely.
Well worth a listen. You guys have had some really great guests. I know I'm a regular listener now, as soon as I found out you were doing it. I ran against Gene for city council in, I believe it was 96, might have been 99. So I have a lot of respect for him as well. And I know one of the, being sort of the urban developer minded fellow, I guess, again, one of those, you know, situations where he's the smartest guy in the room.
We're going to have to stop that about you.
Yeah.
You're one of the smartest guys in the world, okay?
I feel like I'm sitting surrounded by intelligence.
And so I guess from my perspective, as somebody who grew up in Victoria and really became aware of the city in the early 80s when I was a child and sort of watched as things progressed through. I think the city has made actually some really big leaps and bounds. Like, you know, it was a dead zone downtown at one time in my life where there was literally nothing going on and shops were closed on Douglas. And you don't see that as much anymore. You see it occasionally, and we've seen sort of bumps along the way. You know, there was a big push to revitalize. I was on a couple of committees. There was also sort of a general push towards increasing the density downtown, having people live there, which has a lot of, as you know, a lot of social impacts, economic as well as safety, you know, sort of
absolutely
effects, right?
Yeah.
And so, are we there yet? Or is there a way? Is there a room to grow on that?
Oh, there's room to grow. I subscribe to the Robert Jahl view of the world, which is that Victoria is a really great place, and our job as community leaders is to make it even better. There are a lot of doomsayers about, oh, Victoria's dying, downtown is dying, everyone's moving to Langford. That's actually not true. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, but again, the role of the city working strategically with all sectors of the community is to make that even more true. There's, again, a demand from the 40 and unders. They want better nightlife. They want more diversity of restaurants. And one of the things that I find fascinating about this city, while we don't have a lot of greenfield sites, if any, there is a lot of land sitting ripe for development in Rock Bay. I mean, Rock Bay is one of the frontiers of the North, well, downtown north or the north end of downtown, or,
right,
you know, and there are pockets there, you know, there are swaths of prime real estate on Douglas Street crying out for development. And one of the things that really excites me, and again, I think this is where I differ from some of my colleagues on council, I welcome development because I think that development done well, new buildings done well, are amenities in and of themselves. You know, the kind of industry standard is moving towards green building. Mm-hmm. You know, people say, oh, we need more parks downtown. Well, yeah, let's put them on rooftops.
Awesome.
You know, San Francisco just built or is in the process of building a 7-acre park downtown.
Wow.
You know, there's the only thing stopping us, I really believe this, is the way that we think. We just get stuck with our own thoughts, and all we need to do is change our thinking and then quickly translate that to action. It's actually quite simple.
Well, as much as the listeners might think that I'm young, I'm actually not. I'm amongst two young people.
I didn't think about that.
and as Paul has heard, and some folks who've cared to listen know that two of my four adult children have had to leave Victoria. But I'm just so excited to hear that we're going to think about making our region a place where young people can stay and that the entire community becomes sustainable. And what I mean by sustainable is not simply environmental, I mean it's economic and social. And those three pieces all have to work together, in my opinion. So, Lisa, if I could get to now a more tactical place with you about November.
Sure.
So we know Dean said he's going to run. You're going to run. Likely, we're going to see the traditional right-wing candidate emerge, whoever that is, some sort of business-backed candidate. If that person emerges and there's three of you, do you therefore see enough votes between in the city for you to win? How does that distinguish you? Will you naturally fall into a Dean and you splitting the vote? How does that look tactically for people who want to vote for you and they're concerned about how this might turn out?
It's a really, really interesting question. I think the race would get much more interesting if Ida Chong entered it, and we may as well say the name because everybody else is, right? Why, you know, openness.
You heard it here.
Oh no, you've heard it here seven. Someone on CFAX 2 months ago asked me, you know, is Ida going to announce? I was like, you know, I welcome Ida to the race. I welcome anyone to the race. this is going to be
Does she live in Victoria?
No, she doesn't live in Victoria. This is going to be a very, very interesting race if Ida does join us. It'll be an interesting race even if she doesn't. Because if the same 16,696 people who voted in 2011 come out again, then we're fighting over a known quantity. We're all trying to win a certain portion of those voters. And, you know, if it's a three-way race, those voters get split, you know, even more thinly. So my campaign team is obviously focusing on the people who always vote, because they're a serious and important segment of the community. And I know I have a lot of support there because anyway, we'll talk about that in a second. This election is going to be won and lost by getting the 40 and unders out to vote. Because in the last election, 17,000 people voted. In Victoria, there are 28,000 people between the ages of 18 and 40. So if obviously not every single one of them is going to come out and vote. I'm not saying that. But there is a huge, huge audience who some of them vote provincially and federally, but not municipally. So
actually, most of them don't vote.
At all.
No, but that's not what the research says. I've got an amazing research team that has been working for the last year putting some of these things together, and it's not true. Actually, young people provincially do vote. So what we need to do is to harness some of that.
We need to interview that team.
Well, yeah, you can interview them after the election.
They're busy, John.
Yeah, well, they're busy, and also, you know, I'm not naive enough to give away our whole campaign strategy. But it doesn't matter. It's not a campaign strategy of mine to get 40 and unders out to vote. I think this is the future of our community. So the present of our community and the seniors, they vote, they get it, they know, they see directly how the city impacts their lives. So if Ida runs, it'll just be all the more interesting to get those 40 and unders out to vote. And then you can ask them, you know, which of the three of us actually looks most like you? Which of the three of us shares most of what you need for your present and your future?
Well, that would be a fascinating change. I have been involved in organizing and active in the back rooms of politics since I was your age, which was a long time ago. And we've always
That's it.
Yeah, we've always had this. We've always had this ambition to get out the youth vote, and it's never worked.
Well, right. And we've always defaulted to, you know, NDP versus either social credit or liberal, and in Victoria it seems to have defaulted that way. What I'm hearing from you is a different story. It's a story of I'm not really representing that left right paradigm. What I'm representing are people who live in my city that want to continue to live in my city and who want to grow the region. Wow, what a refreshing attitude that would be.
Well, and I think that that's why I won so handily as a councillor in 2011. I was not on council before that, obviously. I ran a very grassroots, community-oriented campaign, and I came within 500 votes of first place. And it's because when I showed up on people's doorstep, they asked, do you belong to a political party? I said, no. They said, are you left-wing or right-wing? I said, you know what? That's irrelevant when it comes to municipal politics. My job as your councillor, and now my job as your mayor, is to work hard and represent every single Victorian from 8 to 80, right? That's
but not
my
7 and under.
Yeah. Okay. 7 and under. Yeah. True enough.
Vote.
Yeah. No. Good point. Okay. From 0 to death. You know. But whatever. Cradle to cradle. Yeah. But I think, and then people who have watched me, and you know, there's a good friend of mine who lives just across the park at Vic High, and we used to be on the board. Or her husband and I used to be on the board at Fernwood Energy together, and she said, you know, Lisa, I think you've got a really good chance, and I'm rooting for you. And she says it's been really interesting to watch you at the council table for the last 3 years. Your decisions haven't been predictable. We haven't been able to say, oh, surprised how Lisa voted on that one, because what you bring to every decision is practical, common sense, and what's best for Victoria, right? It doesn't matter if it's liberal. It doesn't matter if it's like, I have no time for that kind of nonsense at the municipal level.
That's so incredibly impractical. My goodness.
I don't know what to say. And I don't think I've ever been in that position.
You know, I don't want to be over the top about this, but it's so refreshing to see this. And you know, what we see in Lisa is somebody who's younger, somebody who's intelligent, somebody who's bringing fresh ideas to the table. I'm so excited. You know what? And I have nothing against Dean. Dean's, you know, like, there's been this and that that have happened that maybe I disagree with or whatever. He's a nice guy.
Absolutely.
I get along with him just perfectly fine. He actually, I met with Dean. No, I didn't meet with him, but I ran into him at the square once downtown. And he came up and said hello. And my son was with me. And he looked at my son and he said, your dad's a pretty cool guy. So I looked at my son and I said, you know, you heard it from the mayor. You know, it's... So, you know what? Like, it's not about that.
Absolutely.
But it's really, really refreshing to hear this. And so I wonder if we could maybe talk about Lisa for a minute.
Sure.
As opposed to the issues. Because every time I hear you on the radio, I tell everyone in my car to be quiet and I turn it up. Because it's always something interesting. And what on earth drives your passion for this? Because most people honestly don't even pay attention to, you know, what happens in their backyard, much less in their city. Tell us the background. What made you wake up one morning and say, I'm going to do some amazing and innovative things in the city that I love?
That's a great question. I think before I was working at this level, you know, at municipal politics, I did the same thing in my neighborhood, right, with Fernwood Energy. I was a volunteer there, and we had no business buying the Cornerstone building, opening a social enterprise, building affordable housing, having a long-term leasee in stage. So I did that, and that was neighborhood level, you know, economic development.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after that, moved on and, you know, with John and others in the community, really recognized with the 2008 economic downturn that even though Victoria wasn't hit badly, people who were living here who wanted to start small businesses didn't have access to financing because the banks were tightening up. And people who were coming out of prison or coming out of a transition house didn't have access to financing to start small businesses. And so I started community microlending. And it's not a traditional microlending operation where we've got a pool of money that we lend to people. We help people with their budgets, business plans, get the loans approved. And then people in the community step forward and lend to people in the community through our online microlending platform, which I helped to create. And it's the first one in Canada. So I just thought, wow, I could do this at the neighborhood level. I could do this at the region level. Why not at the city? Right? Like, and there's this disconnect somehow that innovation and creativity and outside the box thinking doesn't match with politics. But I think that's exactly what politics needs. The city needs an injection of that. And as we were coming up with this, you know, what we call the Domenico Project, we used words like, you know, here's an action plan. And again, they're called transition trees and prerequisite trees. If anyone's interested in the methodology, look up Theory of Constraints or TOC. It's fascinating. But we use words like encourage innovation and entrepreneurship in the employees at City Hall and, you know, reward risk, even if it results from time to time in failure. Mm-hmm. So I think this kind of thinking is exactly what the city needs. So I guess it was just very logical to me. Okay. I've done this in the neighborhood. I've done this at the region. Why not at the city?
So is your experience with Fernwood Energy where you learned to make such an amazing cup of coffee?
Oh, did you like that coffee? No, I drink my coffee very strong. So that's how I start my day every day.
So I have to ask you as well, Lisa, this thing started being shared on my Facebook by a whole bunch of my friends, Sean DeWolf being one, Carolyn Michaels being another, and it was something called Stream of Consciousness, and I just kind of picked up it at the very end, and I know they just finished their campaign. Maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit about Stream of Consciousness.
Sure. So Stream of Consciousness was created and is curated by Jason Giel, who runs the Sunset Room, and it is a interactive live streaming platform and a series of equipment. Jason just ran with the community support a very, very successful Indiegogo campaign. My team put
For those that don't know what that means.
Oh, Indiegogo, crowdfunding.
Online crowdfunding. Okay, yeah.
So, and what Stream of Consciousness can do is bring local content creation, whether it's a workshop or a business meeting or a speaker or a victory party for a politician or an all candidates debate. It can bring that to the world. and in real time, and not just so you can passively sit and listen from your living room, but there's a side platform where people are online tweeting, asking questions, interacting, and then that's good enough in itself. But then the second piece is that once the event is over, there's no post-production. Everyone is always going to make a video about something, but the post-production time takes so much. But they've already got 3 or 4 cameras. They've got all the angles, and the event is simply archived. And not just the event, but all of the online conversation that goes with it.
So someone could take advantage of all these new technologies with audio, video, digital technologies, etc. in this space, this physical space. Is that what this means?
Well, so for now it's in a physical space, which is at the Sunset Room, but I think that he's
going to... Which is where?
It's down behind Value Village off of Harold Street,
okay,
I believe.
Okay, in that area.
Yeah, so just Google Sunset Room.
Value Village.
Yeah. but that, with another $25,000, which I think he'll be able to raise, not online, but he's had more promises of investment, is a mobile platform. And this is where it gets really exciting. So he can literally go anywhere and stream anything from anywhere. Now, I said to Jason, one of the things that I'm willing to put money into this, my team's willing to put money into this, but we're going to need it on the campaign trail, not just so people can learn about Lisa, but so people can learn about democracy. So people can attend all candidates' debates while sitting in their living room and have an interaction both with the candidates there and all of the other people who are watching online. And then that's not good enough for me. You know, we can't just be all armchair participants in democracy. But maybe you meet someone online through a shared interest.
It's a good start.
No, it is a good start. But then take that conversation into a cafe and do something. So Jason has committed to me whether or not he raises money for the mobile platform, he can tether a bunch of stuff together and go out to these all candidates debates. And so I think we're going to see a radical increase in the kinds of conversations and the number of people that are involved in the conversations during this election because the Stream of Consciousness campaign was successful.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show, Lisa. And I hope I didn't feign too much over her the whole time.
Paul, I've known you for a while, and a lot of what Lisa's talking about is exactly what you've been talking about. And it's not as much Lisa as much as what she's representing.
Yeah.
And these attitudes and philosophies that seem to be on the cusp now of becoming mainstream. And maybe what was mainstream is now not as effective or efficient. I am thrilled to hear this from the two of you.
John, don't get me too excited. it's going to be exciting to see how things go down. And certainly the invitation is open to Mayor Dean Fortin.
Great. And, excellent.
And to Ida Chong, should she or should she not run, to also come on our show.
Candidate number three, yeah.
and we'd love to hear their ideas for the future.
Absolutely.
Well.
I would like that too.
But we really appreciate you taking the time today, and we hope our listeners also enjoyed the show.
Well, and for those listeners, if they like what they hear, how can they get involved with Lisa? Why don't you end this discussion?
Sure. LisaHelpsVictoria.ca, and my cell phone number is 250-812-5986.
Wow.
So either on my cell phone or through my website, you'll be able to find me, and we've got the volunteer button up now, so you're welcome to join Team Helps.
Okay, I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again before November. Take care and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening in.